This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
To the Doctor of Zen with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you for joining us this Tuesday afternoon on Guardian Radio 96.9. And we are on guardiantalkradio.com, as well as you can find us on Facebook on the Doctor of Zen with me, Dr. D. Archer. Of course, tonight we're brought to you by Medical Concierge Services, all your medical care needs. We are a family medicine clinic, so we see everybody. Everybody can come on down, kids, adults, and we also do concierge services. So if you need us to come to you, that is an option, located in Collins Avenue in the Bahamas Heart Center building. And you can reach us at 326-1521 or WhatsApp 432-4010. Great for if you want to sign up with NHI with us. You can just give us a call. If you have your information and your NIB number, we can get that started for you. You can also find us on Instagram. Our Instagram is medical_concierge_services. And that's a great way to check out what's going on with us. And of course, our website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. So that's a great way to contact us all those different ways. And you can reach us and leave a message with our WhatsApp if you need to. A lot of people really like the WhatsApp line because it's really, really convenient, and we can get you signed up for NHI quite easily without having to really go and, you know, call up NHI and do all that stuff. So if you still need an NHI doctor, we are willing to facilitate and help you so you can come on down. Of course, tonight we have a topic. We're going to talk a lot about something that's really kind of common. We get this in the office very often, but sometimes it presents itself in so many different ways that some people don't realize what it is. And so we're going to talk about reflux tonight, reflux disease, and how it can affect your daily life. And it can be quite terrible. I have a story of when I was in medical school, and I didn't get reflux for the normal reasons. It was kind of maybe more of a stress-related one. But there was one particular doctor who was really, really hard on us. And we would just be like in total fear when he came on the ward. And I kind of got like a reflux during that time, and maybe a mixture of being a student and not eating on time and all that stuff. But it was not pleasant at all. So I don't wish anybody that. And so it can be something that's really kind of simple, but it's affecting your daily life and really can lead to a lot of serious issues if you don't get it treated. And so when we talk about reflux, In general, that's the term that most people would use. But really what we are talking about is GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux disease. And this really occurs when the stomach repeatedly has acid flowing back into the tube that's connected to your mouth and your stomach, that tube that we call the esophagus. This backwashing of acid can really irritate the lining of the esophagus, or the tube that leads from your mouth to your stomach. So many people experience acid reflux time and time again. And sometimes time to time, it might go, it may come. And, you know, sometimes it can be quite chronic and it becomes very problematic. And really that's when a lot of people come in, when it starts to affect their daily life. So acid reflux happens repeatedly over and again, and we call that GERD. So most people are able to manage this discomfort with lifestyle changes and certain medications. And it is extremely common, but some people have this so bad that eventually they do need some form of surgery to correct the problem that's causing this backflow of acid to really be a problem. And, you know, nobody wants to hear about surgery. So you want to come in and catch these things really, really quickly. So in terms of the symptoms for GERD or reflux, the most common, of course, is a burning sensation in the chest. And we call this heartburn. And you see a lot of ads on television for heartburn, that burning sensation that's in your chest. Sometimes some people are really afraid of that and they think they're having some type of heart attack, which if you're having any pain in your chest, you should go and see your doctor. But lots of time, it's what we call heartburn. And usually this will occur after eating, and it may be worse at night or with lying down. So there's also this sensation of what we call regurgitation or backwash, where it feels like food or liquid may be coming back up. Some people they feel nauseous, or they feel like they were going to throw up, or they felt liquid, like a sour liquid inside of their throat. And this is the regurgitation that's related to the GERD. They can also have upper abdominal pain or chest pain in general. You can have trouble swallowing, which we call dysphagia. I had a patient recently that had been struggling with swallowing at the table. After he went away, he had a trip and he was eating and doing a lot of things. And then he came back with that particular symptom. And most likely that's going to be a symptom of reflux. And then some people also come in with this sensation of having a lump in the throat, just feeling like something is there very, very all the time. Or when they try to eat, they feel like, you know, there's something else there. This can also be one of the common signs and symptoms of having reflux. If you have nighttime acid reflux, you may also experience other problems. Sometimes it is accompanied by an ongoing cough. There may be also some inflammation related to the vocal cords or the laryngitis. And you can have what seems to be a new or worsening case of asthma. So you might feel like you're having like a wheeze or a shortness of breath kind of thing going on. And all of this can be related to reflux. So you should always see a doctor if you're having chest pain, or if you're having shortness of breath, jaw or arm pain, because it could be a heart attack or something else. Don't just stay at home and think, hey, this might be reflux, especially if that pain is a really heavy discomfort on the chest. So you'd want to make your appointment if you're having severe or frequent symptoms of GERD. And if you've taken something over the counter for more than 2 weeks and you feel like you're not having a relief, sometimes you need to come in, figure out really what it is, and then get the medication that you need in order for that to go away. When we talk about GERD or acid reflux, there can be different causes and different risk factors which can cause a person to get this particular disease. And it's caused frequently by this recurrent acid reflux like we talked about, or you can have a reflux of non-acidic content from the stomach. When you swallow, a circular band of muscle around the bottom part of your esophagus, the tube that we talked about that goes from the mouth all the way down to the stomach. It has a little sphincter or a little like a little band of muscle that relaxes, and that allows the food and liquids to go into your stomach. And then it's supposed to close again. But if that becomes very relaxed or weakened, the stomach acids from your stomach actually can go back up into your esophagus. And this constant backwash of acid irritates the lining of your esophagus, and often it becomes inflamed. And this is really the condition of what leads to having reflux over that period of time. So, if, you know, if that's happening often enough, this can become a chronic problem. And that's when you start to really have these symptomatology. So there are some very specific risk factors that are related to reflux. And these conditions just make it more prone for some people to experience GERD. And the number one on the list is obesity. So if you are, if your body, your BMI, or you've gained a lot of weight, you can see that sometimes things that might have caused you irritation before or more likely to cause you irritation now. So obesity alone, being a certain size, is going to affect the way that your body's esophageal sphincter actually works. If you have bulging of the top of the stomach above the diaphragm, such as what we call a hiatal hernia, or the stomach is kind of pushing above where it's supposed to be, this can also lead to you having this problem with reflux. Pregnant women tend to be more at risk. I mean, pregnant women, they tend to have a lot of nausea and vomiting and those things anyway, but they also have a lot more chances of this heartburn or reflux happening. If you do have any kind of connective tissue disorders, such as scleroderma, as well as any delayed issues that might cause delayed emptying of the stomach. Good night, Mr. Carl Smith online. Thank you for joining us on The Doctor Is In tonight. There are other factors that can affect acid reflux, and they include smoking. So if you are a smoker, you can definitely be someone who is more prone to have acid reflux. If you're eating large meals, especially at night, this can make you a lot more prone for reflux as well. And there are also certain foods that can trigger, such as fatty foods and fried foods. And we're going to talk a little bit at the end about the type of diet that's going to keep you clear of having reflux versus the foods that really cause it. Drinking certain beverages such as alcohol or coffee. So if you're abusing alcohol or you're drinking excessively large amounts of coffee, this can also increase your risk of having reflux. And then taking certain medications. So if you're on medications that are going to affect the acid in your stomach or the lining of your stomach, such as aspirin constantly, you're also more prone. And those people usually, they need to take those tablets with food, large amounts of food. There are varying complications that can happen just from a simple case of having reflux. If it becomes something that is chronic and is not treated appropriately, you can have chronic inflammation over time. And this chronic inflammation can affect your esophagus, the tube that we talked about that leads from your mouth to your stomach. And this inflammation, we call that esophagitis. It's really the stomach acid breaking down the tissue in the esophagus and causing inflammation, bleeding, and sometimes you can also have ulcers develop in the stomach and the esophagus area. This can be a very, very painful experience, and it makes swallowing very, very difficult. And you see sometimes even esophagitis in your alcoholics, if they've had severe GERD over time, if they've been binge drinking and those types of things as well. And so you can also have a narrowing of the esophagus area, which is something we call a stricture. It's really damage to the lower esophagus from the stomach, from the acid. And so after a while, being damaged over and over again, the body does try to heal itself. And so you have like scar tissue that develops that isn't supposed to be in that area. And when you get scar tissue, this narrows the pathway for food. And this leads to a lot of problems, including problems with swallowing. And so this can be also a very difficult complication of reflux that can happen over a period of time. You can also have what we call precancerous changes in the esophagus. So you can see these complications can be quite terrible complications if it's not treated properly. And we call that Barrett's esophagus. And it leads to damage from the acid and cause changes in the lining of the tissue. So anytime the body has to continually be in repair, is continually dealing with inflammation, it can lead to changes. We can also increase your risk for esophageal cancers. So you want to check these things out early rather than late, because a simple case of GERD can lead to a lot of different complications. So if you feel like you're having that and you've gone to your doctor, what do we really do to diagnose or to figure out if you're having reflux? And there are various different tests that we do to confirm the diagnosis. And first of all, we're gonna take a really good history. So we wanna know what's going on with you. When are you having the discomfort and pain and like how, where, why, all of that stuff, how severe it is. But many times we're gonna ask you to do what we call an upper endoscopy. And we'll send you to the GI doctors who are basically going to insert like a flexible tube with a light and a camera. And that will go down into the throat. It's kind of like if you heard about a colonoscopy, it's kind of a similar thing, but except from not from the bottom, it's from the top. So an endoscopy goes from the top and we would look inside the esophagus, inside the stomach, and allow us to see if there are any problems that are related to reflux. When we do the endoscopy, they can detect any kind of inflammation or esophagitis that might be a complication of this particular thing. And they can also collect a sample or a biopsy of tissue to be tested, especially if we are considering what we call Barrett's esophagus that we talked about, where there may be changes to the cell lining of the esophagus itself. So in some cases, if a narrowing is seen in the esophagus, it can also be stretched or dilated. So they can actually use that procedure to fix some of the problems that are related to the reflux or the strictures or whatever may be happening at that time with inside the esophagus. And this is done to improve the troubling with swallowing or dysphagia. And this can be used to really kind of help any problems that you're having at a time. So that's really, really good. There's also an ambulatory pH probe test, which we use to monitor. It's placed in the esophagus to identify for how long the stomach acid takes to regurgitate. So it kind of looks at what's happening inside the esophagus and how that function of regurgitation and how long that's taking to happen. So this monitor really connects to a small computer that you would wear around your waist or on a strap over your shoulder. And they use that monitor, which is a thin flexible tube or catheter. And they put it down through the nose and into the esophagus. It might be a clip that's placed in your esophagus during the endoscopy, and the clip passes into the stool after about 2 days. So you can also put it there when you're doing endoscopy. You want to find out more information. And so you would leave this little probe there, and then it would pass out naturally. There are also various x-rays that can be used to look at the upper digestive tract. And the x-rays are taken after you drink a specific liquid that you're going to get. And inside, it allows you to fill to see if there are any defects in the lining of your digestive tract when you do this test. And the coating allows the doctor basically to see the shape or the silhouette of the esophagus in the stomach. And that gives us a lot of information about how the esophagus has been affected by this reflux over a long period of time. And it's particularly useful for people who are having trouble swallowing. So you may be asked to swallow what we call a barium pill, and then that can help diagnose if there's any narrowing or esophagus that might be interfering with your swallowing. So if you're having difficulty swallowing, this is probably one of the tests that they're gonna recommend for you to take. There's some also some other ones that we don't use as frequently, especially here in the Bahamas, esophageal manometry. And this basically looks at the rhythmic muscle contractions in your esophagus as you swallow. This also measures the coordination and the force exerted by your muscles in your esophagus, and is typically done in people who also have trouble with swallowing. And the final test on this particular list, and then I'll mention another one as well, is a transnasal esophagoscopy. And this is a test that looks for any damage in your esophagus. And so it's a really thin and flexible tube, and there's a video camera that looks in through the esophagus. So it's put down the nose and down the throat, and it sends pictures to a screen. Another test that we tend to use as well when we're looking at anyone with any kind of GI issues, and it might be a test that we look at before we even get to some of these, is like an H. pylori test. And so we look for a particular type of organism, H. pylori, and that could be like a breath test, and they also do a blood version of that test, especially when people are having chronic reflux over time, or they may have had an ulcer. Sometimes there is a bug or an infection, because this particular organism thrives in a highly acidic environment. And so it makes treating GERD very, very hard. And so sometimes we would test you for that to see if we can treat you, because the treatment for that can be just like certain tablets. And you may not need to do a lot more than to take that treatment program for a couple of weeks. And it would include like antibiotics as well as reflux medication that we would usually get, but just in higher doses over a period of time. And so you'll see maybe your doctor wants to test you for H. pylori. And then there's some people who are just kind of prone to H. pylori, and they know that they have it, and we just know to test for it and treat them appropriately. So what kind of treatments are you talking about? So if you're having really bad reflux, you've kind of tried some of the stuff that's out over the counter, or you haven't tried anything at all, you're going to go to your doctor. And first thing we're going to do is talk to you about lifestyle changes. And then if needed, you're going to do like non-prescription medication. And if you don't experience relief within a few weeks, then the recommendation would come to take some medication. So when we talk about non-prescription medications, these are kind of the over-the-counter stuff. Anybody could get it. So if you're suffering from reflux and you haven't tried anything, this segment is definitely for you, because then it'll allow you to see like some things that you can try right now before you even go to the doctor. And if these don't work, you really want to go in and get it checked out. So one of the first things is an antacid, and that neutralizes your stomach acid. So these are things like Mylanta and Rolaids and Tums, things that you hear about all the time in terms of quick relief for reflux. But these will not heal the inflammation. This is one of the biggest problems. So if it's not just like a really mild thing and you haven't made any adjustments in your lifestyle, this is not going to heal it and completely cause the inflammation to go away, especially if you've had some damage to your esophagus due to the stomach acid. And sometimes if you overuse these products, you can have side effects such as diarrhea, and sometimes they can affect your kidney. So it's not something that you should be doing very long-term. They should be short-term relief medication. And if you're not getting any relief, you need to see a physician. Medications to reduce acid production, and these are known like histamine or H2 blockers. These would be your cimetidine or your Tigamet, your famotidine, like your Pepcid AC, your nizatidine, such as your Axid AR. And they don't act as quickly as antacids, but they provide longer relief, and they may decrease acid production from the stomach for up to 12 hours. There are stronger versions of these that we would prescribe you if these aren't working for you. So really the first step is going to be lifestyle changes that we're going to talk about. And then an antacid, you can do an H2 blocker that you can get over the counter. And if not, you really need to see a doctor to get a prescription. We will probably give you something called a proton pump inhibitor, or a PPI. You might have heard about it. These are stronger. And like I said, none of these medications are things that you want to stay on for a very long time, but they're much stronger at acid blocking and than the H2 blockers. And the really good thing about the proton pump inhibitors are that they are really good for repairing the damage and allowing the esophagus to heal up appropriately. And you can have non-prescription PPIs. They're so common these days, like your Prevacid and your Omeprazole and Esomeprazole, your Nexium. Those were all kind of prescription before, and now they're kind of like semi over the counter. So it's really easy to get a lot of these drugs. But, you know, when we talk about the lifestyle changes, you'll see that those are going to be the most important, because you don't want this to be something that comes back. And what happens to a lot of people is they take the medication, they're feeling a lot better, but they don't make the adjustments in lifestyle. And therefore, they really have this really cycle or vicious cycle of kind of being back and forth with those issues. And so we talked about that, right? So your prescription medication, once you're past the over-the-counter stuff that's really, really common, you have some prescription versions of Nexium, Prevacid, Prilosec. All of those are going to be your prescription meds. So they're stronger versions of the PPIs that we talked about. And they're generally really well-tolerated medication. But if you use them excessively, some of them can cause diarrhea, headache, nausea, and changes in your B12 or your magnesium levels. And so like I talked about, you don't want to be consistently on these medications for a very long time. You want to get treated. And usually the window for that, to me, is about 4 to 6 weeks, especially if you're making adjustments in terms of your lifestyle and the foods that you're eating. And then you want to get off as quickly as you can. And you also have prescription H2 blockers, and these prescription doses of famotidine and nizitidine, and they also can have some mild side effects, but usually these medications are really, really well tolerated. Surgery and other procedures. Now, it could be a point where GERD symptoms become so, so bad that you do require more than medical intervention, but you may need some long-term treatments. So for those who need to be referred to your GI or your surgical doctors, there is a procedure called a fundoplication, where the surgeon basically wraps the top of your stomach around the lower esophageal sphincter. So remember that sphincter was that little clip area that would close off the esophagus, the tube from your mouth to your stomach. And they would actually use a part of the stomach to kind of tighten that up and tighten the muscle. And this would help to prevent future reflux. And this procedure is really kind of a minimally invasive procedure. It's called a laparoscopic procedure. And so they wrap that top part of the stomach and can do that like completely or partially. And the most common one is called a toupee fundoplication. And the surgeon will basically recommend which one is best. There are also some other procedures and devices, more modern stuff that they use today, including a Lynx device, which is a ring of tiny magnetic beads, which they wrap around the same junction of the stomach and the esophagus where the sphincter that we talked about would have been. And the magnetic attraction between the beads is really, really strong, and it keeps that junction closed and kind of reduces the acid or reflux from getting back up the esophagus. But it's weak enough to also allow food to pass through. So that Lynx device can be implanted using minimally invasive surgery. And the magnetic beads that are used, they do have an effect. So if you're going through, of course, now you have little magnets inside of you, so you have to be conscious of that. The last one that we talked about before we kind of move on to the foods that are related to all of this and your lifestyle stuff, would be your transoral incisionless fundoplication, which is another procedure that they use especially if you have a hernia like we talked about, they would use that other procedure. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about lifestyle and home remedies that you can use to deal with reflux and GERD. And so we'll see you back and after the break on The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
To The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothar Archer. I don't know if that's online or where, but that intro music, I hardly ever hear it these days. It's always kind of in and out. I don't know if something's going on with that. So maybe, Mr. Producer, you can check that out. I'm going to open up the phone lines as we kind of talk about the last end of the show. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. They always say, I say that really quickly, so I'm going to slow down. 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. If you have questions, if you want to talk about something else medicine related, I'll talk about that too. I'll take the question as well. We're not really doing a social thing tonight, but I know there's a lot of stuff going on. And also next week, I'm going to probably give a little bit of a COVID update. I know we haven't talked about that for a little while, but that's still kind of lingering in the back there. And so we'll do a little bit of a COVID update. One more thing before we get back into reflux and the lifestyle adjustments that we need to take is that we're doing a new segment. We're going to do it once a month, probably the last Tuesday of every month. And it's going to be called Dr. D's Faves. A lot of people ask me about, certain products and different things that may be best things to use and different services. So for the first show, we're going to invite persons, if you have like a product or something interesting, and as well as some of my favorite things, I will take a look at it. So if you're interested in being a part of that show, 432-4010, you can give us a call or send me it. A text on there, just say I want to be a part of Dr. D's Faves, and we'll tell you how that show is going to be set up. To be pretty interesting, because I have a pretty high standard of what things should be, so I try to keep that both in medicine and all different parts of my life. So it'll be interesting to see which products and which services will make it on the list. So if you want to see if you're going to get on the list, you can contact me. And you can send me a message at 432-4010. And like I said, for the first show, it's going to be an open thing. So just give me a call. If you have a really great product or service, then, you know, you might just make it on there for free. Yeah, so we're basically kind of going to move to the lifestyle part of all of this. And, you know, that's really the key most of the time is the lifestyle portion of this. This is what really saves us. And if we can get into the lifestyle things that are going to help us or keep us from having the risk of having reflux, then we can kind of avoid all those terrible things that we kind of talked about, right? And so, of course, we talked about how obesity affects reflux and is a big part of it. And so you want to maintain a healthy weight. Those excessive pounds just put pressure on your abdomen and they push on your stomach and they cause you to have reflux. It's just simple physics there going on. So you want to maintain your weight and you want to lose weight. And I always tell patients that abdominal fat is probably the worst because that's where the fat is kind of pushing down on your organs. It's usually related to various chronic diseases. And so if there's one spot you're going to work, it's going to be your stomach, your abdomen area. Stop smoking. Smoking decreases the lower sphincter ability to function properly. So, you know, if you're a smoker, you're definitely putting yourself at risk for that condition. You want to elevate your head of your bed. So if you regularly experience heartburn while trying to sleep, you want to place something that's going to elevate your pillow at the end of your bed. And you want to raise the head by about 6 to 9 inches. So that's quite a bit. And if you can elevate your bed, you can insert a wedge between your mattress or your box spring to elevate your body from the waist up. Raising your head with additional pillows may not be sufficient. So you actually need to have kind of an incline. And if you have one of those beds that do adjust, then, you know, it's going to be a lot easier to do that. But if you don't, you're going to have put something that's going to position you quite a bit higher in order to keep the reflux down at night, because it can be really bad at night and people can't get to sleep because of the burning, the indigestion, and the reflux. Another one is when you do go to bed, start on your left side by starting lying on the left side. It helps you to have less reflux. It just makes it less likely because of the anatomy of your body. And you don't want to lie down after you have a meal. So it's really not good to like eat and then go straight to your bed. You want to at least wait for about 3 hours after eating before lying down in your bed or going to sleep. You also want to eat your food slowly and you want to chew thoroughly. You want to put down your fork after every bite and pick it up again. And so slow down your eating. So if you're eating really quickly, this can also kind of trigger reflux. And so some of us do eat very quickly, you know. So you don't want to get really, really hungry. And then you're kind of eating fast. And then that would trigger your reflux. So you want to slow it down a lot more. Take each bite. Put down your fork. Do it like that. And you enjoy your food a lot better that way, too. And you also eat a lot less if you eat slowly. When you're hungry, you tend to eat fast and then you overeat. So that's another reason why, you know, you would end up getting reflux over time. You want to avoid food and drinks that trigger your reflux. So this is going to be a little different for different people, but there are some common triggers such as alcohol, chocolate, caffeine, fatty foods, or peppermint. That's going to be across the board for everyone. So you want to kind of stay away from those things if you are having issues with reflux, because that could be what's triggering it. And you want to avoid any tight-fitting clothing. Clothes that fit tightly around your waist can also put pressure on your abdomen and the lower esophageal sphincter. There are some alternative therapies such as, you know, people say ginger and chamomile and slippery elm. These are also going to be some things that people kind of try on the side. And, you know, it varies for different people in terms of how some of these things work. But these are some of the alternative things that kind of come up if you were to go and look up what could I do for reflux, like in a natural way or whatever like that. So you want to go and see your doctor, go to a family physician or someone who specializes in your digestive system. And kind of have in mind maybe what your triggers are before you go to the doctor, because they'll want to know, you know, what symptoms you're having. And don't be afraid to ask questions about testing and different things like that and what you would need to do in order to do your treatment. And you need to be able to tell your doctor certain things, like when you were experiencing the symptoms, how severe they were, if they were continuous or they were occasional, if you seemed any improvement or worsening with different things, and if your symptoms were waking you up at night. Are your symptoms worse after meals or lying down? Does food or sour material ever come up into the back of your throat? And do you have any troubles with swallowing food, or have you had a change in your diet? Or have you tried to avoid certain foods that cause you difficulty swallowing? And of course, if you've gained any weight recently, or have you lost any weight? Because, you know, there could be something else going on, like a cancer or something like that. So you want to have that information. And so I also saw a really interesting article from Johns Hopkins Medicine, and it talked about the GERD diet. So the foods that help you with reflux or, you know, heartburn. And so this doctor, Dr. Gupta, kind of went in about the fact that 20% of people actually are affected by a GERD, chronic reflux condition. And she went into a little bit of what we talked about already, about the sphincter and how that's affected and how that can lead to these problems. So which foods cause heartburn? Well, there are a lot of common foods that actually trigger heartburn and cause the esophageal sphincter to relax and delay the digestive process. If we let food sit in the stomach for a longer time, you know, this can also be a problem. So what are the worst culprits? These are foods usually that are high in fat, salt, or spice. So our fried foods, our fast foods, pizza, potato chips, processed snacks, all the things that we talk about that's not good for you. But chili powder and pepper. Now, pepper is a really big part of Bahamian cooking. Lots of Bahamians like pepper. They like it in the kung salad. They just like a little pepper everywhere. So if you're excessively using pepper, you know, this can be one of the things that triggers reflux for you. So you want to be careful with that. Fatty meat such as bacon or sausage. So anything you're doing excessively. Cheese, other foods that can also cause similar problems also are tomato-based sauces. So one of the big things that I tell my patients who are suffering from reflux, which they may not realize, is to actually stop a lot of tomato-based products and citrusy-like fruits. So that would be like lemon and oranges and, you know, any kind of citrus-like fruits can make that reflux a whole lot worse. Chocolate, which is something that nobody wants to give up, but you know, if you're having really bad reflux, chocolate may not be the thing for you. Peppermint, and of course, your carbonated beverages. So that'd be like your sodas. So really, a lot of the things on the that are triggering reflux are things that really aren't good for you. And then there's some things that are just because you are producing a lot of acid that you need to cut down on, right? So moderation is always key. If anyone's ever heard me talk about, you know, lifestyle, moderation is always the way to go. If you're doing excessively too much of anything, you're going to have that problem. So Dr. Gupta agrees with that. And she talked about, you know, moderation being a key, since many people may not be able to or want to completely eliminate these foods. But try to avoid eating problem foods late in the evening. That's closer to your bedtime. And so they're not sitting on your stomach and then coming up your esophagus when you lay down at night. It's also a good idea to eat small, frequent meals instead of one large, big meal or really heavy meals, and avoid late night dinners and bedtime snacks. So have a kind of a cutoff time in the evening. Before you go to bed, you don't want to go to bed with a heavy, food on you at all. So you want to realize that there has to be a cutoff time for your meals. You want to eat smaller meals. That's really good for your metabolism as well. And you don't want to go to sleep like that. So if you don't do that and you kind of wait a few hours, you can have a better chance of not having reflux, especially if you're having really bad reflux at nighttime. So there are also some foods that are going to be really preventative in terms of acid reflux. So these are the foods that are going to keep the reflux down and kind of, you know, make it a little bit easier for you to, you know, not have these problems. And so there are plenty of things that you can eat to help prevent acid reflux. And so you can stock your kitchen with these. And there are three categories of foods that are going to kind of be protective against reflux. And so the first category is going to be your high fiber foods, fibrous foods that make you feel so that you are less likely to overeat. And this overeating usually contributes to heartburn. So if you have these fiber-filled foods, these healthy fiber foods, then you can reduce your risk for heartburn. What's included on that list? Whole grains, such as oatmeal, couscous, brown rice, root vegetables such as sweet potatoes, carrots, beets, your garden vegetables such as asparagus, broccoli, and green beans. Then you'll have your alkaline foods, and you're always hearing about, you know, alkaline and alkalinity and all the stuff like that. But this is where alkaline foods or the alkaline nature of foods works really, really well, because you're directly going to be feeding these foods into your stomach and you're trying to balance the pH in there. So foods that fall somewhere along the pH scale, those that have a lower pH are acidic, and those are likely to cause reflux. But the ones that are higher on your pH scale are going to be your alkaline foods, and they can help to offset some of the strong stomach acid. And these foods include some of my favorites: bananas, melons, cauliflower, fennel, and nuts. Now, of course, you're going to look at some of this in conjunction with your doctor, because if you're diabetic and different things, you know, you want to do half portions of a lot of this stuff. But that's why each plan in terms of treatment for patients has to be specialized to the patient's need and their conditions, their underlying conditions, if they have any, to make sure that you're doing everything appropriately. And then the third category of foods are actually your water foods. So eating foods that contain a lot of water content, this can help dilute or weaken the stomach acid. And those foods include foods like celery, cucumber, lettuce, watermelon, broth-based soups, and some of your herbal teas. So these are going to be really good for of decreasing the concentration of acid within the stomach. And then there are a few home remedies that we're going to touch on that people kind of think about. And people with heartburn commonly, you know, will go for an antacid inside the pharmacy or an over-the-counter medication to neutralize stomach acid. But there are certain foods also that offer to help with the symptoms. Now, the first one they have on the list, I'm not really inclined to, because sometimes I feel like there's a rebound effect and then some people have issues with this one. So I don't really usually push this one when in terms of heartburn. So, you know, milk is one that people tend to think about, but does it really help? So does milk help with heartburn? Milk is often thought to relieve heartburn, but you have to keep in mind that milk comes in different varieties: whole milk with a full amount of fat, 2% fat, skim milk, or non-fat milk. The fat in the milk can aggravate your acid reflux, but non-fat milk can act as a temporary buffer between the stomach lining and the acid contents and provide immediate relief for heartburn. Low-fat yogurt has the same soothing qualities along with a healthy dose of probiotics. So because of the varying types of milk and how milk, some milk can actually aggravate symptoms, I do not really suggest milk as one of the go-to things when you're trying to relieve heartburn. Ginger is one of the best digestive aids because of its medicinal properties. It's alkaline in nature, and it's also anti-inflammatory, which eases irritation in the digestive tract. So try sipping on some ginger tea if you feel like the heartburn is coming on. So these are kind of like early remedies to do before it's really, really bad. don't rely on a lot of the home remedies if you're having really severe symptoms. But early on, you know, maybe these adjustments or these things that you add to your diet can really assist and help you. You know, there's another one that people talk about, which is apple cider vinegar, but there really isn't enough research to prove that drinking apple cider vinegar works for acid reflux. So this is another one that I kind of stay away from. A lot of people swear by it. I mean, if it's working for you, I'm not going to knock it, but I wouldn't really subscribe people to go and drink a bunch of apple cider vinegar. However, you should never drink it at full concentration if you're even going to try it, because it is a strong acid that can irritate your esophagus. So you can actually make the situation worse because you will be drinking a very acidic product when you're trying to get rid of the acid itself. So for those people that have tried that, they're actually mixing that with a small amount of water and they're taking that with meals. You're not going to do apple cider vinegar by itself at a full concentration. So I would stay away from that one as well. Some people talk about lemon water, generally considered very acidic, but small amounts of lemon juice mixed with warm water and honey has an alkalizing effect that neutralizes stomach acid. Also, honey has natural antioxidants, which protect the health of the cells. So this is one that you might want to consider. Of course, you know, you're not taking the acidity of the lemon straight. You're actually mixing it with water to kind of neutralize it a bit, and you're adding some honey, so it acts as an alkalizing agent. And so those are kind of the main kind of home remedy type of stuff that people are going to be using. And so a lot of that information came from Johns Hopkins, if you want to take a look at it. But if you have heartburn two or more times a week and changes to your diet or your eating patterns have not helped, you want to really consult your doctor. You can start with your family physician like us, or if you are already seeing your gastroenterologist, they can start performing some of the special tests that we talked about. And you want to make sure that you, with frequent and acid, you don't end up too damaged to your esophagus, because we talked about how there are really kind of a lot of complications for that. So GERD is really something that can be treated. It may seem like a really terrible thing when you're going through it. And some people feel like they're dying or they're having a heart attack or, you know, something really terrible is happening. But with a combination of lifestyle changes and medication, it's definitely something that we can treat. But persistent symptoms of reflux need a proper evaluation. It needs a proper evaluation because you don't want it to end up being something severe or cancer or something that requires surgery. You really want to find the underlying cause and discuss the available treatments that you would need. And so it's something to not take as lightly as it seems. A lot of people do have reflux, but you don't want to take that lightly at all. Oh, sorry, callers. Caller, you're on the air.
Doc, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I had switched the page, but go ahead. Good night, Doc. Mm-hmm.
Good night, Doc.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
That's good. I'm okay. Doc, when you mentioned bananas, right, watery food, right? My mind was on bananas before you even mentioned it, because I wanted to ask you a banana question. Doc.
Okay.
Bananas that are imported here, basically, they have a tag on it, right? And my question is, why is it that these bananas, I have observed that the organic banana, the ones that are grown here, right?
Mm-hmm.
When that banana is ripe, and you take the skin off the skin turns black, right? Oxidized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the ones that have the label on it, they are always yellow for weeks, maybe like the yellow, and they don't turn black with the skin off. So my question is, why? I mean, like, how come they don't oxidize like the regular banana? Is it that when they genetically modify the banana, genetically modify it so that basically it have a shelf life of about a month or two? Because the bananas that are growing there, like I say, if you take the skin off it, or even if the banana gets ripe, then it turns black.
Yeah.
These bananas only get a little spot.
Yeah,
on it,
so that's that blackness is the normal process of, you know, oxidizing and all that stuff like that. I haven't really noticed it, but I would say that a lot of stuff in the food store is GMO. Usually, if you look at the little tags, it'll tell you those numbers mean something. And if you look them up, you can tell if they're GMO.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
or not.
I mean, like, in my mind, it's like,
for, you know, shelf life and just to look good and stuff.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. So, what effect would it have on the human body?
I mean, I feel like if you can eat local
as much as possible, you should do it.
Because we don't know, you know, they're always coming back and telling us this stuff is okay, but we don't have any long-term studies. So if you're modifying anything, just like a certain thing that modifies your cells, we won't talk about that tonight, but anything that's modified is not going to be, you know, the natural thing.
How our bodies
react to that, we don't have enough information on that. So my advice is always, if you can get it local, because it's going to be more nutritious as well. Yes, you know, and it's probably going to be easier to digest and it's not going to give you any additional problems. I would go with the local over anything that's probably flown in and brought in through the food store.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks a lot. That's the only question I had to ask.
Sure. Let's see if we can get that other caller in. Yeah. Good night. Thank you for calling. Caller, you're on the air? Did we lose him? So, caller, we have a few more minutes. If we call back, we can take you quickly. But did we get him back, producer? No, we lost one. I'm sorry about that. Sometimes I guess I do really get into it. Okay. But, yeah, so basically, you know, the caller is correct. And, you know, I have this constant battle between convenience of going to the food store and the standard of fruits that and vegetables, everything that's coming into our, you know, market. A lot of this stuff is export only products. A lot of this is GMO products. They're coming from all over the world. We don't know how long it's take them to get shipped here. And so even if you look at like the avocados, they have like a window of like a day. If you don't catch them on the very day that they're just properly ripe, they just turn really weird and dark and gross. So either the fruit is turning really dark and gross before you even get to eat it, or like the gentleman is saying, it's not really decaying the way that it should. So it's hard to tell. We don't have enough information. I can't tell you that GMO is terrible for you because they say that, it, you know, there's no difference or whatever. But I can tell you that if it's not acting in a natural manner, it probably isn't going to act that way in your body. And we really need to invest in our local farming. I think if we've learned anything over the last few years is that relying globally on the rest of the world for the things that sustain us, it has put us in a very difficult position. And then it's hard for us to tell what we're putting into our bodies because these things are coming from other places. And we don't have the type of control mechanisms in place to even know what these things really are. If you look in Europe, and I love going to the food stores in Europe because first of all, they don't let in most of those countries, they don't let in a lot of GMO products. And so a lot of that stuff is locally sourced or, you know, organic, naturally organic. They don't have to put organic on the label. You can tell that a lot of it comes from somebody's farm. The last time I was in London, we went to a farmer's market. It was a really huge farmer's market. I forgot what the name is. But it's like everything was local. You could see that these people picked these strawberries out of their backyard and they brought them right there. And you were able to buy things really, really, really fresh. And so that's how a lot of people shop over there. The produce areas are crazy. Harrods has a beautiful selection of stuff as well if you go in there. But that's how we should be living. And we're on an island, so we should be eating tropical fruits as much as possible. We should be eating seasonal fruits. That's going to be really good for us because the seasonal fruits will provide us with the nutrients that we need for that period of time. And so that's what we need to do. Real food security and real health, you know, those two things are quite linked. And that's what we require to have a healthier, happier Bahamas. So we're out of time. Sorry, second caller. Thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. We're going to do our little COVID updates next week, so you want to listen in and see where we are with that and just how we can keep ourselves safe for the next few months, years, whatever. and what's going on in the world related to that. So keep safe, Bahamas. Thank you for listening. The Doctor is in with me, Dr. Denotha Archer, for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We'll see you next week, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Good night.